I think the radio stations are like crackheads. Not meth, not heroin, crackheads. They want money. They always want money. They say that they don't want money or payola's out, but it's money. Every time you try to work a record, the radio promotions companies want money.
Welcome to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with your host, Tom the Digital Architect Liebel. Are you tired of spending money on marketing efforts that produce little or no results? Unable to decide whether internet marketing is right for your business? Want to take your brand to the next level but are unsure of what steps to take next? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in their pursuit of growing a profitable business and learning actionable strategies on how they can outperform brands that are older, bigger, and stronger.
Well, thank you for coming on, because last time I messed up really bad because I couldn't get a good internet connection in Barcelona.
Barcelona.
When you get things on Airbnb, some of the people lie about their internet connection.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's selling point.
That's terrible.
He told me it's a wired internet. It was like a hotspot that ran out of the 1 gig that he had on it, and it went to like 56K. I couldn't do anything with it.
Shit, I bet it's a lot of lies on Airbnb. Pretty much real estate, you got to make that shit look pretty as you can. For one moment, we went through it once.
Do you guys ever stay at the Airbnbs when you're doing shows, or is mostly hotels and motels?
We tried it. It's mostly hotels, but we tried it in Seattle, which it was kind of cool, actually, in Seattle, but it just didn't look nothing like the pictures did. You know, it totally wasn't like the pictures. But I kind of like it because we all got to stay in the same spot, you know, share one big house. And that made it kind of fun.
Yeah, I mean, I love that part of it, too. I like being in an apartment, so I feel like a local wherever I go. So, you know, if I go into any city, I'm like, you know what? I live here. I got an address.
Yeah. That's dope.
It's a dope idea, man. It's dope.
How much of a hassle was it for you to get that out there, though? Did you just went on Airbnb.com? Did you have, like, when we did, we paid cash, and it was some, I don't know, it was kind of not as easy as a hotel, but maybe as easy. But I don't know. I'm 50-50 on it. But sometimes, yes, for a dope big-ass house, yeah, but if you just need just one bed in a bathroom, it might be overkill. I don't know.
Well, I do it all the time. So I do it in different countries too. Like now I'm in Prague and I'm going to Poland and Germany and Italy after this. So just, you know, I'm Airbnb-ing all the way through. Yeah, but what I do I fish, man. I'm fishing. So I'll message like 50 of them and I'll see which ones respond first. And then out of those guys, I'll try to negotiate things, right? Like I'll be like, I'm staying here. I'm getting other offers and I'll, you know. So I'm getting better. Okay. Even with the internet now, I'm making them show me the speed, right? So I'm like, go on speedtest.net and show me the speed. Send me.
Wow.
Yeah, you serious.
You're smart. Yeah, he's serious. So it used to take a little bit of time.
You know, you just shoot the emails like, you know, 50 at a time.
It's just a
template.
I got it. Interesting. I want to figure that out.
I want to go back a little bit with you guys to when you first started out. Even though we're talking about hip hop and the music, it's a lot really similar to starting a business in my head.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you're getting into something where you're not certain if it's going to work out. And everyone around you is probably like, well, yeah, maybe, but probably not. Good luck, guys. Like, it's a good hobby, but it's not going to work.
Yeah.
But you guys got into it. It was in 98.
Yeah.
Right? So I just kind of want to know from each one of you, what were you thinking when you went into this whole music business? Because this is not a place where people make money, usually. It's more of like, yeah, I'm going to be on stage. I'm going to get pats on the back. But I'm not really going to get paid. So what were you guys thinking back then?
We were thinking like a business in college. We were college students, started off. We had a little bit of a learning curve because we had a record store. So we were able to learn the music business from selling the music itself. So we were able to learn what the customers wanted by what they purchased. So we learned buying habits. We learned what days to sell music, what days they were coming in the most to buy music, and what even through album covers, what people's eyes gravitated towards when we first came out. So it was pretty much a big test subject, and the Western Kentucky University was our small little world. People were from all over the place, so no one was just, it wasn't like we were just selling to our hood. And we learned a lot by selling the music while we were going to school. And after we had maybe 6 to 8 months or 9 months of success selling music, we put our T-shirt of Nappy Roots into the store. And so we sold the T-shirts first, and people bought the T-shirts up in different colors, and we knew the name Nappy Roots was a viable name. So we took that name and then put it on the album cover, and we try to make it different from everybody else's album cover. So we put a cartoon head of a nappy headed guy smoking a joint on him, and basically in all white. When everybody else was in Pen and Pixel Graphics at the time in late 90s, Master P had Pen and Pixel Graphics on Smash, and everybody had a big diamond ring with a Jaguar sitting on top of a speedboat. It all was fake, but everybody was doing that in the late 90s. 3-6 Mafia did it. Master P did it. Anybody from Indiana was doing it. And so we said, okay, well, let's not do what they're doing. Let's do something different. So we just figured out then it's best to be different, stand out, brand yourself, find your fan base, target your audience, and reel them in with quality and content and you know, give them clever ways to support you. And that's kind of how we learned that we can do this. That's how we started as Nappy Roots. And that was different from most people at the time who was probably just going house to house selling stuff out the trunk. We had actually had a stable place where people can come to us. And again, not just buy Nappy Roots, but you bought Master P, you bought Brandy, you bought Twister, you bought Flip and Slide, which is Trick Daddy. You bought everything that we got from a major distribution company. We had that in our store. And so you came to buy that, and then we just kind of brought you into buying Nappy Roots.
Yeah, you guys sound way smarter than most of the music people I talk to. I mean, I've been following you guys for a while. I mean, I've seen you guys live multiple times, and I've loved the branding, and I've loved the consistency, but now I'm starting to see why this has been happening. So this is not something where you guys just jumped in. This was really thought out pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, we studied Master P, we studied Cash Money, we studied Wu-Tang. We studied all the classic people that were doing it well, and we knew that no one where we from had done it. So for where we were coming from, there was no way to really have a tech. Like, even in Atlanta, if you live in Atlanta, you could see everybody in Atlanta to know how to kind of do it. And we didn't even have that. But when we got to Watermelon Chicken and Grits level, we were coming down to Atlanta to study and to get assistance from people that were doing it in Atlanta. We really looked at Atlanta after we got out of Kentucky. We knew that we had to go to Atlanta to really try this idea. We really had to come to Atlanta to do it. And so what you see now, you know, since we've been independent, we've been in Atlanta since 08 officially. This is our headquarters in a sense. And so, you know, in order to play with the big dogs, you got to run in the big leagues. And so to stay in Kentucky and do it, we would have not survived at all after our initial signing to Atlantic Records. We had to leave in Kentucky and really get with the big dogs to really understand how the game was really being played down south. We're students of the game and we're fans of the South. And that's what we kind of identify with is Southern hip hop. And so in order to do that really well, again, you have to swim with the fishes. So we're still learning, you know. And that's why we got with Blake to make the 40 Acres Project. It's in order for us to take our music to the next level, we had to go to someone who was younger, who understood the game just as much as we did, had a grasp on it, and also was making good music or the like to take our music to the next level. And so we're very meticulous in our direction, and the wind doesn't just blow in our direction. We position our boat to be in front of the wind as much as possible. So that's why we specifically chose to get with Blake to make the 40 Acres Project, because we knew this was part of the business side of our campaign. Is to be in Atlanta and have the Atlanta, not necessarily the Atlanta sound, but to be in Atlanta and use Atlanta as our support system. Because Atlanta, in regards to hip-hop, that's the third mecca. You got New York, you got L.A., and you got Atlanta. And Atlanta is pretty much the key to the South. Is if you're not popping in Atlanta, or you cannot maneuver in Atlanta, you're not really in the South like you should be. And so that's very important for Nappy Roots, is to claim that, have that identity, but to also kind of be in our adopted home as well. And Scales is from Milledgeville, Georgia, so we have Georgia in our roots. But now it's just like, you know, it's almost like breathing now that us three hook up and make records that sound like they sound now.
Yeah, you're answering a lot of my questions without me even asking them.
Oh, damn. But let me shut up then. I'm going to shut up. I'm done.
But it's good. I appreciate it. But no, I know what you mean, because I lived in New York. I was working at the music studios up there for a while. And even, you know, when I seen people like T.I. coming up to the studio back then, around 2000, it was a whole different thing. Like, they were coming in as guests, you know, like the mm-hmm. New York people really had that thing down. I live in Atlanta for a while, too, but I didn't realize that it's a mecca like that. Because, I mean, you know, a kind of Master P and all those guys, I kind of felt like Texas was just more of the
New Orleans,
dirty South than, you know.
Louisiana.
Yeah, like Louisiana, yeah. Texas. Yeah, so yeah. I wasn't aware of it.
Texas definitely had a good... probably more of an independent movement than Atlanta. Like the Southwest, they've been selling records without major record labels. You know, they've been doing that in Texas. But Atlanta kind of brought to the game mainstream hip-hop, you know, coming from the South. We was kind of like the first to really put a bunch of artists on out of the Southeast straight to major labels and straight to New York. You know, that kind of came from Atlanta. That's the difference I see between the Texas and the Atlanta movement.
That's one of the differences. But, I mean, the second thing, you know, Texas is Texas. Like, I would never move to Texas. I know a lot of hip-hop came out of there, but that's not the vision I have. I have, like, you know, cowboys and other things, which just don't.
Texas is big, though. Texas is big. You can drive 5 hours and still be in Texas. I think that's a deterrent.
You got the oil industry. You got Austin, which is a whole different beast. So I'm with you on that. But I still have this vision of Texas as not really cool in any way whatsoever.
It's hot. That's for sure.
Yeah, it's hot, definitely. But let's talk about Atlantic a little bit. After the first independent record, you guys signed with Atlantic. So it's a big label. It's like a dream for a lot of people. But
right,
what did you really get out of it other than a big budget? Because to me, it seems like Atlantic was more of an investor than anything. And obviously, there's a lot of strings attached with that.
That was our worst deal in history. I mean, when we got signed for chump change. But we kind of knew that if we actually got through the first part, and, you know, when you read your first, you know, how to make it in the music business or anything like that, all you need to know about the music business, it'll tell you. Just because you get a deal doesn't mean you're coming out. And I learned that early on. Just because we had a deal doesn't mean we're actually going to come out and have an album that's on the rack. And a lot of people don't understand that when they sign to a major, that just because you sign a record deal doesn't mean your shit is going to come out. And we weren't as naive in doing that. But we tried all possibilities not to have a bad deal. It's just we didn't have a buzz. We came out of Kentucky. We didn't know what we were doing. We didn't have a good lawyer. And therefore, that lawyer, you know, ended up siding more so with the major because our lawyer sees artists that come through there all the time that go into majors. So they're not going to do anything to disrupt the major system that they do to get money. We didn't know that, so we ended up signing a bad deal. But what we got out of that was we learned a very valuable lesson that it's corporate, it's business, nothing personal, and what we really got out of that was fame. And that's what we needed to be independent was to have our name plastered all over the country, all over the world, all over, at that time, websites. Social media was not what it is now then, so we were kind of on the after Napster, but before iTunes. So we was in that little window of nothing was happening but selling records barely, and people found ways to download your shit illegally. So what we got out of that was fame. We was able to put our music out and someone to really put the gas behind the pedal for us to really travel and do what we had to do. And without that, we wouldn't be here right now. We wouldn't be talking about any of this right now if it wasn't for our brief stint at Atlantic Records for a couple years. And I say a couple years. We were signed in 98, didn't come out to 2002. We did an album that didn't come out at all and got completely shelved and had to go back into the studio again and do it again. So what we also learned was patience, resilience, not giving up, teamwork, how to look people in the face. And I don't want to say lie, but how to look people in the face and smile even when you're having a bad day. We learned that we're in this by ourselves because at the end of the day, when the CD stopped selling, all we have was each other, and that really is another reason why we're here, because we was able to lean on each other. And I always look at it, if we was a solo artist, if I was a solo artist, if Scales was a solo artist, we wouldn't have been able to take and make those decisions that we made because we wouldn't have had the courage to really do it. I mean, it takes a lot to really want to get off Atlantic Records and want to not be famous anymore but to be successful and respected. And those are key things that we really strive behind in that roots is to have respect and to be successful. And success is long-term success, not just overnight success. And you see a lot of artists that have overnight success, and you might call them one-hit wonders, and they might have a strong buzz, but you don't hear from them again. And it's very easy for anyone to have that problem. But what we learned, and again, from Atlantic Records was patience, and we're going to get fame out of these motherfuckers if nothing else happens. And so we got famous.
Yeah, we didn't
get rich, but we got famous.
I remember that. You guys almost won a Grammy, too, I think, back then.
Two of them. We almost won two Grammys.
How much control did you have over your creative process back then? Because, I mean, you guys are musicians, too, not just businessmen. You do put out really good music. That's why I'm talking to you.
So what
I know about labels is that, you know, it's like, okay, you made this good track. Make three more just like this.
Right, exactly.
Tell me a little bit about that control process, the creativity. How did you still come out with such good music while you were being, you know, controlled in a way?
We had control. They gave us control because we were coming from a place that they didn't even know what the hell to do with it. Like, our first album, again, it was shelved because they didn't know what to do with it. And it sounded like someone else's shit. It sounded like we went somewhere else to do what we did. So how we got out of that was we found, for Watermelon Chicken and Grits, we found a producer named Groove Chambers, who is from Kansas City and lived in Atlanta. So he wasn't part of the Atlanta sound, as if we went out and sought for 808 Blake, who's from Decatur, and wants to create a new sound for Nappy Roots. It's different. But we sought out one producer who believed in us. He was trying to get on. He was hungry, unknown, unheard of. And we both started from scratch, from the ground up. And they allowed us to make that because the music that we were making was good. But we had to tap dance. We had to keep sending them records for approval. And it was a long, tedious process. We had to do this and, no, that's not good enough, or do this, or that's dope, or keep going like that, or we'll pay for things like that, but we're not going to do things like that. And, you know, but we was making what we wanted to make in the process of that. But I would never want to make an album like that again under those type of constraints or situations. But they gave us control to do what we wanted to do. They just picked the songs they thought were the best songs, and we kept those. Well, we all agreed. We mutually agreed on the songs that we wanted to put on the album. It wasn't like, oh, we're going to put all these on whether you like it or not. It was like, no. And that's kind of what happened on the second and third times around, is we was hip to what they were trying to do and didn't want to make country albums for the third time around. You know, and with the second album, we had a lot of money. We had a lot of access to high, top-notch producers and big studios. And we really tried to make the perfect album, and, you know, with $2 million and Raphael Sadiq and David Banner and Little John and Kanye West and Groove Chambers. And so that album was all over the place, but creatively, we still had the same kind of say. And, you know, after that, you know, I don't know. It's kind of, we went independent and a lot of things changed dynamically.
Right. So before we get into that part where you actually made some money, just as a lesson for people trying to, you know, still get into the game and be with the big labels, how much debt did you have from the second where you completed the album before you sold your first one? Because I know they put a bill you got to pay off before you make anything.
Well, from the first album, wasn't that much. We didn't have kind of no stupid, crazy budget, because every time we got in the studio, we found ways to cut the costs. We was recording in apartments and kind of really home studioed it until we got it to a point where we need to polish it up. And then we got into a studio and got it polished up. But the budget really wasn't astronomically high for the first album. The second album was a $2 million budget. And,
ouch.
Yeah, that was stupid. We was doing dumb shit. Like, you know, everybody was staying, you know, at the top floor in a penthouse suite of their own. And it was dumb. We was doing stupid shit. You know, it was just not smart, not in the days of now. And, I don't know. I don't want to say that we're making a shitload of money or we're not. Let's just say that we're fine, we're cool, we're out of debt, and we're making money.
We're not getting into that yet. All I want to know is, and I think you kind of mentioned it, so when a person hears that, yeah, you guys had a $2 million budget, that means you had to pay this money off first before you made anything from the CDs.
Correct.
Yeah, so people don't think it's like, yeah, these guys got $2 million to ball out. Well, you kind of did.
No, it was a loan.
Yeah,
It's a loan. When you're dealing with a major label, it's a loan. That's all it is. They loan you the money. They might not have the same terms as if you bought a house, or it's a school loan, or it's a car. It might not be at a certain percentage rate that you can negotiate, but it is a loan. And what they give you, what they front you in marketing dollars, what they give you in PR, what they give you in videos, what they give you in wardrobe, what they give you in car services, all of
that.
Would
they give you an A&R in car service?
All of it. All of that is probably double billed back to you. And probably you're also probably absorbing not only your budget, but someone else who didn't sell shit out of their budget as well. You're paying for their shit as well. Whether you like it or not, the money that you make as an artist successfully goes to cover all the bills of the label, especially if you're the marquee artist of that year and you're the ones responsible for keeping the lights on. I remember before we was had a conversation, it was Lil' Kim and Fat Joe that were keeping the lights on. It was Trick Daddy that was keeping the lights on, and that's who got all the attention. But then when our shit started selling, we were keeping the lights on, and we got all the attention. And so we was responsible for keeping everybody and all the money that's coming. And think about a $15 CD, and you sell a million of those things. That's $15 million. And that's off the first album, you know what I'm saying? So $15 million can do a lot for a hip-hop division of a record label. Now, count in the pop division, the rock division, the country division, and the alternative, and the blues, and the jazz, and Atlantic Records is huge. They got 20 floors in a building that, you know, you only meet five of those floors. And in those five floors, it's a big-ass building. Like, so it's a lot of people that make the machine what it is. And if you're not making that machine what it is, you're going to be put on the shelf or the back burner, and they're going to mess with the people who are. So think of how many artists get signed to a major label. Back then, they got sucked into the machine that didn't come out. And then now think about how many artists that are right now that are not even in the machine that can make an album right now in the bedroom and put it online and not even deal with those people. Imagine the difference of how many people that is coming and going throughout. What you said earlier was that artists barely make any money. That was then. Imagine now. But imagine the difference between now and then is...
I can't imagine now.
I wouldn't advise anyone to get in this business. That's the end of the day. If people ask me, what would you do? I would say, don't get in it. Because if you're trying to get in it now, it's already set for you to fail. It's like going to Vegas with $100,000. You're going to lose that $100,000 if you keep playing the slots long enough. You keep playing Bill Blackjack long enough, you ain't counting the numbers, you will lose. Is that how long you stay? And that's kind of what the game is. It's not built, it's set up for anyone to really win. Not everybody. A few people can. If you are talented, you have a good team, you have, you know, a great song or several songs, you have a fan base, you can survive. And that's kind of where the game has got to now, is survival of the fittest. But back then, you know, it was, you had to tap dance to get on, and once you got on, your chances of actually coming out were slim. But if you did, the chances of actually selling records are slim. And within that, the chance of even selling a million records after you come out, even hella slim. So it's a little bit of us with being blessed with God, a little bit of us not giving up, a little bit of us having a good team and system around us, and us really being very talented at what we did and sticking together.
Yeah, I like what you said about keeping the lights on, because you guys are basically an equivalent of a startup right now. So, because that's what the VCs do in Silicon Valley. They pick 14 mm-hmm. different startups, and they know 13 will fail, and one's going to pay for everything.
Absolutely.
So that's what you guys were. You were pretty much just, you got a loan, and they just took a bet on 14, and you paid for everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. In a nutshell, I did all that. You explained it in half a sentence.
Eventually, you guys smartened up, and you got the fame, which, I mean, that obviously it helped. But then you decided to leave the major and bootstrap your next albums, pay out of your own pocket, and keep all the money. So can you tell me a little bit about that transition, moving from the major label? Because you still kept the distribution deal, from what I understand.
Oh, we got a distribution deal through Ingrooves, Universal, which is kind of Ingrooves with the distribution digital. And they ended up doing a deal with Fontana through Universal for physical distribution. And we kind of just kind of got backdoored and grandfather clawed in, because we took an early digital distribution deal back when Orchard was blowing up and iTunes still wasn't what it was. We still kind of wiggled our way in there because of the fame and the name and the brand that we were able to position ourselves with an independent. But it was actually Scale's idea to go independent while we were on Atlantic. So I definitely let him explain, you know, the thought process of that.
Well, yeah, I think at the time, that's when Koch was really running the independent game. And a lot of people kind of looked down on the independent game because a lot of people couldn't see where it was going. I got good advice from some people who were in the label who was telling us that independence may work better for us, like get more control of our music and basically take the fan base that we had from Atlantic Records and go straight to them, you know, serve music straight to them, especially with the internet coming up with all kind of platforms that we can go straight to our fans and give them the music and cut down on the cost that we just talked about that the label usually put up, and focus more on like 500,000 records sold as opposed to trying to go platinum over and over. And we just wanted ownership of our music, and we know being six members that at some point, we would have to get some ownership of the music we was making for longevity, if nothing else. You know, when we old, we still should be able to license some of this old music that was hit. So we knew it would be a lot of work. We knew we would have to call on all of our contacts to help us do it. I think one mistake that we made, we took a while between Atlantic and going independent. It was like a four-year star that we didn't put out music, and that kind of hurt us a lot. I think if we would have went straight to independent, But it took 4 years for us to learn how to do it. And, like, now we're what? We've been independent with our own company for
almost 10 years, man.
Almost 10 years.
We've been off Atlantic since for 10 years, but independent since for six.
Right.
With a real deal behind us.
Right, and we're now. And it's taken really this long to really understand and really get it down to a T, from the touring aspect, from the publishing, from the music placement. All of this stuff is things that Atlantic Records did for us that we've had to learn how to do. And these are billion-dollar companies, so, you know, you can't just come in and do it exactly like they did it. But I think we're very happy about where we're at now. We own our own company, and we're filling in all the gaps that took years to learn, man, and it's rewarding. Like, the work that the benefits we receive are directly from our hard work. Like, we see if we work hard, we benefit. So, you know, I like it. I like where we are. We get a chance to directly deal with everybody who works in our company. We hire them. We fire them if need to. And, you know, it's a business. And I think we made the right decision at the end of the day.
I think so, too. I mean, when you become independent, then you're kind of responsible for your successes and failures. You know, there's no one else to blame at that point.
Right.
But you also get more of the rewards, too, when things happen.
Mm-hmm.
When the big label paid out per CD, I mean, I would imagine it was like between 8 and 20 cents, right? What was the wholesaler doing?
Now, I went on the major label level of it. Yeah, you didn't get even a dollar on your shit. You got a couple points. I can't even remember what it was. It was very low on the first album. And the second album, it was a little bit higher than that. But it's not even, as far as distribution, that could be anywhere from 19 to 25% from what the major was taking, on top of what the label was getting, and then what you owed back to them to end up what you was getting from after the producers and the writers got their part of it, after the stores got their $5. So, you know, you're talking about $17 getting chopped up all the way down to where you're walking away with a quarter, 50 cents. If you got 50 cents, you were lucky then. And it's like, really? I did all this work, and all I get is, you know, two measly fucking quarters for my efforts? And that's where we all thought that's wrong, it's fucked up, and we got to figure out a way to make this better. And so by being independent, we have changed the tables where all we're giving up is a small distribution rate. And, you know, of course, iTunes or the digital holder of the music, they get their fee, then the distribution gets their fee, and then we get the rest. And what we do with the rest is how we pay out the producers, or that's more in our control of what we negotiate between us and our relationships we have with our producers and whatnot. But it's much, much better. It's 1,000 times better, man. Like, again,
yeah.
I don't want to say what we're getting, but it's more than two fucking quarters.
Yeah, and going back to Atlantic Records, all the records that we sold, you still never really recoup. You never really recoup, and you don't even know what you have to recoup. At least we didn't at the time. You just have no idea what you're being charged for. But now we know every cent that goes into our project from top to bottom. We approve every penny that we spend on a project. So it ain't no rental cars in L.A. You know, we really control how well we do and how much money we can make.
I'm loving it because now it's a real business. It's no longer just an investment where you're running around. It's like, this is your own stuff. Like, you're in charge.
Yeah.
At the same time, though, there's no one pushing you anymore. There's no label behind you saying, like, yeah, you guys got to record. So how do you keep yourself motivated? And how do you keep what's your routines like to come up with new material?
That part ain't so hard. I think we're all artists at heart. So we love to make music. Like, we love to be on stage doing it. I think the hard part is just the resources. Like, you can be discouraged sometimes when you can't get that major tour that Atlantic Records could get, or you can't get that feature that you would have gotten if Atlantic Records was behind you. I think the frustration can come in on that, you know, and you can't get radio. I think radio may be the biggest component, or the hardest component that an independent artist has to deal with. Like, radio is almost impossible for independent artists. So that part can be a little frustrating, but as far as motivation, you just keep the good music coming and finding new producers like 808 Blake, and you know, the music will come. The motivation to do it will come. Being on stage, seeing people cheering on even your old music, that's motivation in itself. And you know, YouTube, all of the places where you get comments and feedback from your fans, that's enough motivation for me.
A lot of creatives, they kind of want to follow the trends. And what I've seen with you guys is you don't.
Mm.
You keep this consistent sound, but it's always a little different. It's always something that I haven't heard before, which is really interesting, especially going in the independent route. You would think, well, if I make a song that's like everything else people want to hear now, but it's by us, maybe we'll make more. So I'm just kind of curious, like, how do you guys think about that when you're making an album, like the whole concept of it, you know, as it fits in into the whole hip hop, what's happening now?
I mean, it almost happened. Like, I know for myself, I made songs that I'm glad Skinny and the rest of Nappy Roots was there to say, nah, this ain't what we should be doing, you know. So we have to kind of check ourselves. And, you know, when we come together, I guess it's just a certain sound that we make when we're all together. And, yeah, as a solo artist, you definitely, it's hard not to drift and do what's the new sound or do the sound that you think will bring the most success, which is what's on the radio. You want to be on the radio, so you try to make a song like what you just heard. But being that we're a group of four members, we kind of have checks and balances. You know, and we all have to make songs that we all can agree with. So I think that helps us keep a certain sound for Nappy Roots and not drift too far away from it.
Also, to add to what Scale said, I also think a knowledge of self. Like, we're not young, impressionable MCs anymore. You know what I'm saying? Like, in college, we was in college. You're early 20s, you know, and I was in college probably a little longer than I should be. So I definitely had the gift of being older than probably everybody else to not do what everybody else was doing. I was kind of the older guy in college. I should have been probably working and had kids, but I was still in college. And so I'm not the 18-year-old that wants to do what everybody's doing because of peer pressure. I was like the 21 or 22-year-old who was there with the 18-year-olds and, you know, was able to kind of guide them along. And I kind of took that responsibility even in Nappy Roots. Like, we've always been anti-fad. That's part of the name of Nappy Roots, is to not go and do what everybody else is doing, to be true to the roots and remember that and always keep it nappy. And that's just always be yourself. Always do you and be happy doing you. And even early on as Nappy Roots, we couldn't rap like we had the Bentleys or the, you know, all these fine stores, because where we were from didn't have that. So it would be foolish for us to talk about shit that we've never ever seen or been around, because everybody would know that that would be a lie. And so that kind of still reigns true now. I can't talk about me being in the trap because I don't live in the trap. I can't talk about killing motherfuckers because I never killed anyone. I can't even talk about selling birds and major cocaine. Do I have the connect to the plug? Because I really don't. And for me to do that would be me on my own personal self being, that's fake. That would make me a fake person, and that's not what I am. I try to say I'm as real as it gets, because I'm just a humble dude that is cool with being me. And Scales is the same way, and I think that's what translates in our music, is because we're cool with driving grandma's Cutlass to the store. You know, it don't have to be a Benz, you know what I'm saying? My mama has a Benz, and I've never used my mama's Benz in a rap, you know what I'm saying? But my granny's Cutlass is so much cooler, you know what I'm saying? Because it's a Cutlass, T-top. You know, and those are the things that are so much cooler from where we're from, because that's where we're from. And thank God that I was able to go to college and damn near graduate before I got on as a rapper. So I'm a grown-ass man rapping. I'm not a kid. And the things that we talk about are for grown men or for adults. And we party. We have fun. But we also have responsibilities. And not just responsibilities to ourselves, but to our kids, our families, and to our fans. And now we've established this type of rapport with our fans that we keep it so vividly real that if we remotely talk about any of these things, we would be losing the fans instead of trying to gain fans. And the biggest risk we took was to try to change our sound up for this 40 Acres project. And you know, but we still did it exactly how we would have done it if we was the whole group in the studio with us. We took our time. We communicated. We made each verse better than the last verse. We didn't just rush and say, this is the one. You know, we spent 2 years making it, as if we made Watermelon Chicken and Grits or the Humdinger, which both took multiple years to make. You know, we just took our time and really developed a new sound because we knew we wanted to. And we also grew. You know, within being you, you do have to grow. You do have to learn new things and get rid of old bad ways and aspire to be better. And, you know, you do want to aspire to have more things in life, because that's just the way how life goes in just American society. You want the best. I'll never say I'm going to go ball out so I can buy a bowl of porridge. No, you want to ball out so you can eat filet mignon. You want to have the successes so you can do what you want to do in life. And that's all about what Nappy Roots is. We went to school not to be poor. but to learn to be educated. And so that's just part of what we do is let's stay true to what we believe, because if we stay true to that, we'll never have to chase a hit record ever again. The records will come to us. If we try to do what's on the radio now, by the time our song came out, that shit will be old. And it happens every season. What's happening right now in the spring is not going to be the flavor of the month in the fall. And you got to think about what's going to be happening in the fall. You got to think, okay, I should be making layup weather music right now. Maybe I'm making some lovey-dovey with my girl shit right now, because I know if this shit comes out in October, it'll be right on time. Versus making I'm in a picnic chilling with my boys grilling right now, you're going to be asked out, because by the time that shit comes out, the leaves are going to be orange and it's going to be daylight savings time and it's going to be Halloween. Ain't nobody grilling. So you got to think about that in your when you make music. When is this going to come out? Because if it's going to come out now, it's not going to happen. You can come out tomorrow, but it's not going to be like what I'm talking about. We're releasing a record with some real campaigns behind it. And we were aware of that when we made 40 Acres Project. We were definitely aware of when we were trying to release the album. And we had all the say in the world because we're independent. It was easier for us to do that than to be with someone else who doesn't have that luxury of saying when their shit's coming out. Look at Lil Wayne. He probably made a dope-ass summer album thinking it was going to happen the last summer, and he's still not been able to come out with his own shit. And that's the difference between Lil Wayne and Nappy Roots is he might be famous as fuck, but he doesn't have control of when his shit comes out.
I still love my Cutlass. I revoked that thing till it just died. Yeah, you know, people had better cars than me, but I had more money in the bank.
Yeah, man. Well, what year was your Cutlass?
Oh, that thing was a 94.
Okay. That's what's up, yeah. I'm thinking like 88 Cutlass, 74 Cutlass, 89. You know, my auntie had a T-top Cutlass.
The funny thing people don't realize is if you want to get a nice car, you just rent that thing for a weekend.
Yeah, or lease it. I mean, you know, yeah. There's all kind of ways to ball on the budget. It's all kind of ways.
So I want to go back to something you guys mentioned before, is that independence cannot get played on the radio. So I want to know why. And also, how do you work a record then, since you can't play it on the radio? I just want to kind of address those two.
I think the radio stations are like crackheads. Not meth, not heroin, crackheads. They want money. They always want money. They say that they don't want money or payola's out, but it's money. Every time you try to work a record, the radio promotions companies want money. The radio promotions want money so they can go into the radio station and buy the ad or buy the spaces so your song can play in rotation when it goes for ads. To go for ads takes money. It just all takes money. When I'm talking, and you're talking about 40 to just say you want to be on 50 stations, and there's more than 50 stations across the country, and you want to be playing on 50 stations, you want to be playing on rotation, and you got to beat out every major label that's already dropping money, favors, saying, I'll give you my biggest artist to perform at your summer jam. You can't compete with that if you're an independent, because you're not the biggest artist. You might have a fan base, but they really, really want Drake. They really, really want Tiger. They really, really want Nicki Minaj. They'll take, maybe they'll take Nappy Roots one day in a club, but it ain't their summer jam. And that is leverage. And that's some things that as an independent, you just don't, either you don't get it. And I'm not saying all records are like that, because some records do gravitate from a viral success right now, or they might start off in a strip club, or they might go off in the club, and it's just a really good record that starts off in the club, and then the mix show DJs play it. And it does work its way up the chain, the old school, traditional way, but not often. It's like seeing a tornado. Like, they happen, but have you ever seen a tornado actually really form and actually been in front of one for real? It's like that you hear about them, but they're just not really something you see all the time. And so, for everybody that's trying to rap or everybody trying to make music, think about all those people that it's an overflow trying to get to through a bottleneck. It's just so many things that are not going to happen because it's just not enough space. And that's really oversaturation, no talent. And then these no talent artists are getting on the radio station, might get that one slot for a local artist. And some local stations don't even play local artists. So now your chances as a local artist will never happen because you're relying on a local radio station who will not play you because all they play are the hits. All they play is what the major labels that came in and did favors for them to do. I'll come in and rent your whole thing out. I'll buy your radio commercial ad. And that's where the game has changed, because now, not just that, because there are certain radio stations. I was going to say something on that. There are radio stations you can get. There's online radio stations. There's satellite radio stations. The radio stations that are like apps, iHeartRadio, and there's SoundCloud, and there's places you can get music heard that are like radio stations. Podcasts play artists now. So there's different ways that you can get your music out that are rivaling the old school way of doing business. And that's the direction that we're headed, just to be clear. It's not like we're not playing radio. we did work our new single on radio, but it was more of a grassroots and college radio. And that's kind of where we realized this is our lane instead of trying to go pop and spend $50,000, which we have as an independent. We spent $60,000 as an independent with our own money trying to work a record with Anthony Hamilton on it, and it still fell on deaf ears. And it still wasn't enough money. So it's like, you know what? We're not going to keep doing that because that's a lot of money as an independent, and we have to say on what we're going to spend and what we're not going to spend. And we're not going to keep spending that type of money to keep feeding crackhead people who think like crackheads, where they get high off this money right now, but they want another favor later. That's not enough. They want to keep going and keep going. It's never enough. It's never enough.
That's insane.
And that's the problem that we had with radio stations, and that's why, again, we chose. We did have an independent radio promotions guy we hired for this project that we all agreed on as a label and as a team. And we did give him a little bit of money, and he did work the record, and our record ended up working up those charts and becoming number one on those charts. It was college radio and grassroots market radio, which are maybe the lower end on the frequency on your dial, but they still love good hip-hop. And you'll find those people, but a lot of people might not even know about those stations, which is there. And again, another whole problem that we can discuss, you know, later on about awareness of where you can find good hip-hop. It's out there. You've got to find it.
So it seems like with the big radio stations, you got to pay to play.
Absolutely. There you go. There you get it. Thumbs it up in half a sentence.
I didn't realize that.
They say you don't, but it ends up, you end up paying, and you end up paying a lot of money. And you might get lucky again. You might see a tornado form, but sometimes you just hear about it.
And it just ain't a lot of slots either. Like, you know, you got your top 10, and then you got a few songs outside of that. Then you got the mix show. But other than that, we talking not a lot of songs in rotation at all.
Think about it, Scales. Think about it. You got top 40. You got top 40 radio. That means the top 40 songs in the country. That's it.
Yeah.
They only play 40, and they might cram all 40 down your throat in over 2 or 3 hours, and they just repeat that shit over and over again until you fucking get sick and tired of hearing it. But then that end up winning some kind of award because everybody can't get the song out of their head because they beat it into your head. Top 40 is high as you can get. Now go from there all the way back down to what you said, with mix show kind of being in the middle, and then underground radio kind of being where they play whatever they want, and all the way down to podcasts. And there's so many ways you can skin a cat. But radio, like you said, it's not a lot of slots for artists. And think about how many artists now that are out there. Would you say there's 1 million artists trying to get on? And 100,000 are actually maybe on?
Probably more. I would actually love to see a reality show of old rappers and their moms, and these guys don't want to get jobs and don't want to stop rapping, you know? But these guys can't make it ever, but they're just still living with their moms. I would love to see a reality show about these guys.
Yeah, that would be dope.
And it'd just be funny just to listen to the moms whining about their kids, you know? He's like 30, still in the basement trying to be a rapper.
Yeah, it's scary though. But you don't know, as a rapper, you don't know how close you are to that shit. You're one hit away from not being with your mom, and you're one hit away from actually going back, moving in with your mom. And especially at the age we're at, I thank God that we're fortunate enough to not have that problem. You know what I'm saying? Like, we have a fan base. We have music. We have 808 Blake, who's making our beats now. So we're not running around trying to be a young guy as an old dude. We're not trying to be that. And I thank God that we're so blessed to not be in that situation, because that would be very disheartening to know that we had the ability to do it. We made bad decisions that ended me back up at my mom's house and chasing a dream. And I say this to Blake all the time. Some people, when you get on, you only hit a certain level. And that level might not be as high as you want it to be, but that's as far as you got. And you will constantly, constantly always try to get back in the studio to either get to that level again or get higher than that, but you'll never get at that level again. We were fortunate enough to have our level. We might have peaked out at platinum selling, 2-time Grammy nominated. So we touched the top of what we was going to touch. And no one else coming from where we came from has done that. But there's so many artists out there that have done and surpassed that. Even from where, like, in our area now in Atlanta, look how many artists that are very successful, and look how many artists that only have local success, but they would never get out of local success because their minds are not thinking on the global level. Scales always said international, world music. He's making world music, or he's just making this around-the-corner shit that he'll never fucking leave the block. And he'll always be rapping and living with his mother because his music didn't allow his mind to leave the block or the hood, and that's where he will always be. And that's where the bad travesties are of good hip-hop. And some people don't understand or too scared to leave their hood, and therefore they only get to a certain level, and they never see the radio success. And they end up living with their mother. And it's more of them than it is of people that are probably having success. And that's also scary, because your chances of actually making it as an artist, not just rap, which is oversaturated, but any genre, if you don't leave your damn block, you're not going to make it.
Yeah, I remember there's a rapper from New York, Thurston Howell. He said in one of the raps that there's more people on the stage than in the crowd.
Yo, there's more people on stage than in the audience.
Let's get back to the radio stations, because, you know, there's only 40 slots. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that most of the radio stations throughout the country, they're all owned by one or two companies too, right? So these guys are just playing the same shit everywhere.
The major stations, yeah, you probably got five, maybe six now, but I think it's only about five major stations. But then you got a bunch of little substations that think just like the majors do. They think like the major stations think. Well, yeah, they only play these type of songs or this format. And, you know, but then you get down to the podcast and the, you know, like the SoundClouds and the, you know, the iHeartRadios and the Pandoras, which are also stations owned by probably worth $1 billion. I haven't really looked at the valuations lately, but those stations have a little bit more flexibility. But you just find, it's, to me as an independent, and this is what the love is, you can find the stations that are meant for you. Blake is really dope at that for us. Like, he brings a whole value of thinking like an independent to our situation, to where he will go out and find the things that are directly meant for us, and it's very easy to go out and talk to those people. You can talk to a blogger that has a high bunch of followers and get your point across. You can find on YouTube, you can find someone with the high subscribers on them and submit your records to them and then get them to play it on their feed and get in front of, you know, 500,000 people. So this, the way of radio, I would remove radio from the conversation for us and say, how can you get your music broadcast? Or how can you broadcast your music out? And there's so many more ways than just radio that a lot of artists don't think about. And that's why it's so easy for some independents to get that notoriety, that virality going for them, because they're thinking outside of the box and not thinking the traditional way of how to make music, market music, promote music, and sell music. You have to think outside of that when you try to make music. Like for us, we're not even trying to, I don't want to say we're not trying to sell music, but we want to be more involved in corporate America than we probably want to be in the retail America. Because corporate America, there's other things you can do, like license your music, get your music into movies and soundtracks and commercials and things of that nature to get your music exposed probably just as well as it does radio. And that's the things that really make Nappy Roots able to survive in this type of fickle industry and market these days. Because if you're not playing on the radio, you know, as a major artist, you really have an uphill battle against you.
The other part of it is you guys are kind of growing with your fans. So like you said, you're not trying to be like a young guy on the block. You're not doing that stuff. So when I listen to each album, it just feels like I feel growth on both ends, myself and the group, right? Which I think is awesome. That's what's keeping a lot of fans involved. But at the same time now, as you said, the market is so segmented. So you have, instead of going to one label and a couple of radio stations, now you have like 1,000 bloggers that you got to hit up. So that's got to bring some challenges with it too.
I think so. But, you know, again, by us working with Blake, he's been able to bring a new layer of bloggers and social media outlets that maybe us as Nappy Roots, who've kind of been in the game a while and kind of seasoned and maybe even a little bit weathered and that haven't been thinking in that direction. He's brought those things to the table for the 40 Acres Project that allow us to get in front of a new audience, a younger audience, a more connected audience. Some of our fans that are had purchased the Watermelon Chicken and Grits back then are older now and probably don't know about these sites no more than I do. But the newer fans of hip-hop, that's where they live, and that's how they see their music. And they go to those sites where we wouldn't be aware of those, and that's where kind of where having Blake, 808 Blake, as a younger producer and him kind of being on the scene in Atlanta and him knowing these sites and having access and relationship with these sites and even his own fan base through SMKA has allowed us to get in front of a newer audience so we don't have to rely on some of the old traditional ways to get our music across. And that, again, is a benefit.
Now, I want to go a little bit into the future because hip-hop doesn't really respect its elders. And I mean, you guys realize that. And other than like Rakim and a couple of these other guys, usually you don't see many 40-year-old rappers doing well or like 50-year-old rappers, right? It's like I remember I met the guy from Group Home in New York, and he would rap on anyone's album for $500. It was like, it was, you know, house in Pennsylvania. It wasn't a good future. So what do you guys think? What are you doing to set yourself up for that time? It's kind of hard to be a 45-year-old and rap to 20-year-olds. It's a whole different thinking. Like, you don't even relate with these kids anymore.
Yeah, I don't want to be 45 and have to rely on rap. I love rap. I love to do what I do. I love my kids. My son, my oldest son is 15. When I started, he was one. He's pretty much grown up in it. And I don't want to have to, I don't want him to look at me as if I'm trying to hold on to my career, because I don't want to be that guy. You know what I'm saying? So I'm definitely thinking of other ways. We've definitely positioned ourselves to do other things. Because we have a label, we have the ability to sign artists and sign younger artists that have the same like-mindedness and do that. You know, I look at Snoop Dogg for inspiration. I look at Raekwon and Ghostface. I look at Method Man and Redman for inspiration. I look at Cypress Hill for inspiration and De La Soul. And all these guys are still artists that are still doing it. They're just finding their own little niche and hitting their fan base. And like you said, they're just growing with their fan base. As hip-hop grows, I think the artists will get older. But Snoop is not slowing down at all. He just dropped the album with Pharrell and is still touring and doing big festivals. Cypress Hill, humongous festival. And these are artists that I grew up with listening to and appreciating. And I think it's about diversifying your assets. It's about not just relying solely on rapping, but doing other things. Consulting is something that I think that we can get into. Again, having our own label, we'll be label owners. We can do that. We have a deal with distribution. So we're not just signed as an artist to a sub-label who signed to another label who signed to a distribution company. We're at pretty much the top of what we're doing. And, again, working with producers like Blake and have our own distribution allows, well, if Blake sees someone that he thinks is like-minded or can do well on Nap Roots Entertainment Group, then we can have a conversation and position that artist and position ourselves and say, you know what? Think like Jay-Z would, you know. Think like what Kanye West is doing. You know, think like not necessarily having to rely on rapping, but you love to rap, you do it. But you also love to see the younger generation below you also see some opportunity and shine. And if you help them out, that might just be what makes you, you know, have fun as you grow old as well. What you love to do is what you love to do. And if you do what you love to do, you'll never have to work a day in your life. And so I just love doing this as an independent artist. Performing, touring, I don't mind the drives, I don't mind the flights, you know, I don't mind any of that because I'm not working for no one else. So I can do this the rest of my life. I just got to set my company, my team, and my fans, give them everything they want out of me at the same time. You know, dope interviews like this help where we can get the point across and keep our fans engaged for the next 2 or 3 years, and we'll just keep giving good music without trying to oversaturate ourselves in the marketplace.
How much time in the year do you spend touring? Because I know that's got to get tiring. And you said it's you know, you can handle it, but how much time do you spend doing that?
Since we went independent, we've tried to do at least 100 shows a year.
That's insane.
At least, at minimum. And sometimes you get very close, sometimes you go over, sometimes you land right on the nail. I think right now we're almost at 55, I think, for the year so far. I think we had a great start in January. We did like 20 dates in January. And I think we're almost 50 dates right now. And this is like halfway through the year. So, and we're planning on a 40-city tour starting in late September. So we'll be, you know, we'll hit our quota this year once we land this 40-city tour. And you think about it, it's 52 weeks to a year. So at least 2 or 3 times a week you're trying to do shows. So you very easily hit it. You know, you can easily hit it. We normally record on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, tour on Thursdays through Saturday. And when we do a tour, that's more concentrated. And it's just like that. You know, you just get into a routine and you just, for us living in Atlanta, it's very easy for us to hang out and kind of convene and talk about shit. And, you know, we're just living, man, like kind of like hippies. You know, that's how I would put it in the mind. We're just like hippies. You know, every day is like Saturday. You wake up when you want to, but as an independent artist, you have to be about your shit. You know what I'm saying? You have to get on. You have to make them calls, man. Or if not, them calls are going to make you. You know, you don't want your shit sitting outside on the street because you didn't want to get up today or you partied too much last night or you want to get high all day. It's like, you know, you still got to get shit done, man. And that's just a part of being a business-minded individual that since we started with, you know, this ain't just a get-along game. This ain't just no treehouse shit. We really are putting shit together with a campaign and a plan. Because, yes, we are going to get old. And you don't want to be like the guy from Group Home, living with his mama, rapping on $500 tracks to make a living.
Yeah, he wasn't living with his mom. Just you know, I don't want him coming after me for that. But he was living in like some small house in Pennsylvania. And I was like, dude, that doesn't sound fun.
Everybody's vision of fun is a little bit different. But, yeah, you want to do it. As an artist, you want to have all the glitz, glamour, and glory of materialism, man. But there's more to it for Nappy Roots, man. It ain't just that. You know, you want to have a career. You want to have respect. You want to have your legacy to be how, you know, is ahead of you. People know you because you make good music. People know you because you have a great show. People know you because you're a cool, humble guy. People know you because you hang out with them and pour them shots and smoke weed with them or party with them. Or people know you because your kids are good or they did good in school. You want to be known for good things and not necessarily because I don't want people to know me because I gave up on my dream. I don't want people to know me because it didn't go well for me. a lot of people know me because I hung around bad people and made bad decisions and got hooked on drugs and couldn't come out of that, or alcoholism. I don't want people to know me for that, because that story is too far frequent for anybody. Black, white, hip-hop, pop, rock, it doesn't matter. You want to be a successful individual for your family's sake and for your name's sake, and that's also part of it.
How important would you say the routine is? Because it seems like you guys work a lot. You said 100 days just touring, then another 2 days a week recording. Then you got to focus on the business too. So it seems like you really got to have your shit together. You got to be organized.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It is. I mean, you know, you got to have a good team.
Definitely a team. Got to have a team around you. Keep you motivated. Keep you with structures. You know, different departments that we have to focus on each day of the week. Have to stay motivated, but it's fun. So when it's fun, you know, it makes it a lot easier.
Yeah, but you guys been together for a long time, man.
Yeah, we committed. Like, it's kind of too late to do anything else, you know. It's just not involving Nappy Roots, you know. That's what we've committed the last 20 years of our life to.
I see a lot of times where people start breaking off and doing their own thing, but you guys haven't. You guys have been doing it together for the whole time. So I'm just kind of curious, why is that?
Well, no, we've lost some members. Two members over the course of the last 10 years have left the group to pursue their solo careers. Prophet left the group when we got off Atlantic in probably 05, 06. He probably left the group in 06. You know, that was the first one, which, you know, we didn't let it stop us, but, it had an effect, you know. And then Big V left the group after Nappy.org in probably 2012. And, you know, that had an effect. And that, when he left the group in 2012, it definitely had an effect on the dynamics. And that's when we decided that why he left, we weren't mad at him wanting to do a solo project, because you have to grow, and that shows growth. You can't just keep doing the same song and number every day, all day, without you wanting more out of life. And I think he wanted to do what he wanted to do with his own music, because he couldn't do it with Nappy Roots, because, you know, everybody has to cut what they want to do, and we have to do what we got to do with Nappy Roots. So when he left in 2012, it kind of was a wake-up call for me and Scales to say, you know what, we need to do something too that's different than just Nappy Roots, because sometimes Nappy Roots does get old to people, and we got to just keep shaking it up. And so when he left in 2012, that's when we decided to do the 40 Acres situation. We just started doing records like that, and we hooked up with Blake, I think it was 2013, I want to say. And so we have lost members of a group, and trying to keep six members together and act like everybody's going to be happy hunky-dory for 10 to 20 years, this ain't Earth, Wind, and Fire. And I don't know what the hell they went through amongst them, but I seen what the Temptations went through, and it's kind of like that, you know. It's just hard keeping people, egos, aspirations, dreams, family members. Hell, Yoko Ono broke up the Beatles, so, you know, you got significant others coming involved. You have kids coming in now. And a lot of things that just change your dynamic of living, because you're growing. And again, we started this in college, and here we are. Again, like I said, my son was one when we had this thing going, and now he's 15. He's got braces now. So it's like things change. People want different things, and you cannot hold people down to a ball and chain. Like, you know, they expect people to just, you know, do the song and dance. So it has happened, and we can't be afraid of change. Change is good, and sometimes it'll shake you up and invigorate you to do better and be better. And because V left and Prophet left, that is what kind of made the 40 Acres project what it is now. That allowed us to give the freedom to give us a little bit more room in the telephone booth. You know what I'm saying? Like, again, six people, it's tight, man. Like, it's tight everywhere you go, from hotel rooms to your travel accommodations to who shares the liquor bottle to who gets on the song, to who's speaking on the interview, to, you know, who shares the free clothes when they come. All of that has to be factored into a large group of where we were. We was trying to, all we were trying to be was like Wu-Tang, which is to come in as a group and then be able to do side projects and then come back as a group and then come back and do some side projects and then come back as a group. You know, that's all we really wanted to do. But the deal that we signed and the times that we were in and the circumstances that we were dealt with just didn't see it that way. For whatever reason that was. It's okay.
In a lot of ways, I think you guys came out better than the Wu-Tang, because if you put them on a CD now, it sounds like 8 or 9 different people, right? It doesn't sound like one group, which you guys still do. I think they're so individual at this point. Even if you put them in the same room, it's like
right.
8 different companies trying to, you know, go on stage together.
Right. I would think it's very messy, but I do respect their brand. I follow Wu-Tang on Facebook and Instagram, and their brand is still strong.
Oh, man. The brand is amazing.
The Wu-Tang, when you see them W's, they can still do things today, and still people still buy their brand. So I respect the brand, and I will always look at them as a brand And I think it's very complicated for them because you do have, oh man, I can only imagine the posses that are around each individual member and all the entourages. Like Raekwon's entourage might be different from Ghostface's entourage, which is different from RZA's entourage, which is different from you guys' entourage. And they all have their own entourages and they all try to have a meeting. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine a show with all the Wu-Tang members and all their entourages around? And it's probably madness because when we did it, we all had friends. And, you know, they were friends to us, but entourage to everybody else that didn't know. But, shit, I remember Prof had 4 or 5 people that was with him all the time. And Scales had 2 or 3 that always showed up when he came up. Or when we did Louisville, everybody's family member who lived in Louisville shows up and wants to roll with us. And, oh, man, it was madness. And we always pissed off the promoters because 50 people got in free. You know what I'm saying? And I don't miss that part of what we're doing now. I don't miss all the crazy people because, you know, you got to be cordial to everybody's friends that you don't know. And they're supposed to be cordial to your friends, but everybody wants to play that they're the hardest guy with the hardest guy who's next to the hardest guy. And it's just, we never had any problems with none of our entourages mixing and meshing, but it's just always a situation where everybody's trying to get somebody in. Everybody's hands on the bottle thinking it's theirs. And, you know, when we're doing a 40 acres, what we're doing now, it's so simple because it's just me and Scales and Blake. And a couple other people that we have that are helping as far as our team is concerned, but it's not all the madness that it was if we were 6 members of Nappy Roots trying to make a decision on what beat we're going to jump on or what color we're going to wear tonight on stage or what hotel we're going to stay at and why we're staying here and why you order that and why can't we eat here and, you know, all of those things that come with trying to deal with a bunch of people. We don't really deal with that too much now working on the 40 Acres project. And that's why I think this is the perfect album for us. Is because it was controlled. Like I said, when we sought out Blake to help make the every beat, we knew we wanted Blake to make every beat, you know. And so it was very easy for us to get into a small studio whom we knew the engineer because we went to college with to make the album like he did on the Humdinger. It was very easy for us to make the album in the process without all the fluff around it that you get when you're making it on a major label or you have a bunch of people that you have to consult with or to get their thumbs up. We just, it was Scales giving his nod, I gave my nod, Blake played the beat, and that was the beat we rapped to that day, and that's how the process was. And it was very less stress, you know, stress less.
You can be stress less, but there's going to be still stuff going on. There's going to be ups and downs, especially when you own your own company.
Yeah, of course.
So how do you guys deal with those low points? Because, I mean, I bet you've hit a couple of them where you were like, I don't know if we should even keep going. What did you guys do at that moment? Like, what do you think usually when that happens?
That's when I dig in. That's when I even go even harder. I like the tough points because I make the best music when I'm at my toughest times of life. I had a very hard time making struggle music when I'm not struggling. And I'm not saying I want to have a career of struggle, but that's when I make my best music because I'm more honest about where I'm at in my life. And I like that. It gives me a challenge. You know, I like when the odds are against me because I know that that's when I make my best work. I get up every day knowing that the odds are against me, and I call Scales at 8 in the morning when the odds are against me versus if I'm sitting fat, me and Scales might not talk but twice a month. You know what I'm saying? So I like it when people are counting us out or the light bills do, or we got a 20-hour drive and, you know, we got to turn around and go do this again. I like when it's like that because that means it makes me feel alive. Like, all right, this is what it's about. It's not for the balloon ride. You want the way up and you want the jet down. You don't want to just glide through life like, you know, ho-hum and the songs of life and shit. You need a rainy day to appreciate the sunny day. You know, you can't take it all sun because you're going to get mad because it's too hot. You want a cold winter every now and then to let you know that you can't wait to get to the warm summers. And that's kind of what drives me and the passion for me is this ain't going to be great. This ain't going to be fun all the time. But if you can find a way to smile, have fun doing it, and do it with these guys, and that's the thing, it's who you're with when you're in your hardest point. I've seen some of my lowest points, and Scales has been there right with me, either going through it or saying, shit, I got you. And that says a lot, man. And vice versa, when he's been going through some of his shit, because I've seen him sacrifice a lot of his things to make it in this shit, that means I got to go in here and do what I got to do as well. And that's part of just living, man. You're going to have ups and downs, highs and lows. You got to ride each wave like a surfer, man. As long as you know how to swim, man, shit, you'll be all right.
I really appreciate this, guys. So if, for people that want to listen to your music or just reach out to you, where can they find you?
Probably the best starting point would be nappyroots.com. We have a link to all of our social media on there. But depends on what you like to use. We on Facebook. Always, every day we wake up, get on Facebook, just search Nappy Roots, verify. Twitter, Nappy Roots. We're at Nappy Roots. Every social media, our music is, the best way to stream our music is probably SoundCloud. We keep it real current, keep all the new music and a few old songs on there where you can just search Nappy Roots also. But we're up on all of it, man. Every social media that you favor, you'll find Nappy Roots. We're starting to do the Periscope, so if you're on that, check us out. We try to keep people current on what we're doing. But yeah, nappyroots.com probably be the first step, place you could go and really find out what's been going on with Nappy Roots.
No static, got an automatic.
Take a nigga back down to back a row. I give my old soul what it's asking for. I'm trying to find where them angels sing at, where X and King at. So listen for the knowledge I bring back. A cigarette pack and a deuce bottle. Blue collar, ain't too much we can do, father. Take it me, I live life so anxiously. Tell me this is about more than sex and buying weed, maybe. But anyway, we burn daily.
There's a saying in business circles, if you have 1,000 loyal fans, you never have to work again. So obviously for you guys, it needs to be at least 3,000 because there's at least 3 members, but
well, my thing is it needs to be 100,000. That's my number, is 100,000. If you get 100,000, that's doing pretty fucking good.
No static, got an automatic. No static.
Thank you for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please help out by leaving a review on iTunes, and don't forget to hit the subscribe button. If you have any questions, hit me up in the comments on smartbrandmarketing.com. Until next time.
Thanks for listening to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with Tom, the Digital Architect, Liebelt. For more tips, tricks, and interviews, come visit smartbrandmarketing.com. That's smartbrandmarketing.com. And join the newsletter. It's free.